Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
For the best in morning radio, tune in to Sam in the Morning with Charlotte. Only on LA Talk Radio.
Good morning and welcome to the show. Today is Tuesday, December 2nd. As most of you know, Charlotte is not here anymore. And I have great company today. I have Ashley Linder in the studio. Welcome to the show, Ashley.
Good morning. Hello. Thank you for having me.
Of course. Of course. And we met last week. And I thought you were pretty cool. So I invited you back.
Thank you.
To be on the air and stuff. So this is cool. Thank you for joining me. For those of you outside of LA, you don't know, but we're actually getting some rain. I didn't think I'd get to say that this season, you know?
I know. Oh, my goodness. How long has it been since the last rainstorm in these parts?
Years, I think, actually.
Okay, good. Know. Then I'm not the only one who is unfamiliar with LA rain.
That's true. Yeah, that's
my first
true.
LA rainstorm.
Yeah. So apparently you moved here from somewhere else. Where did you move from?
Yes, I moved here from San Francisco a little over a month ago. And then prior to that, I was born and raised on the East Coast, just outside of D.C.
Oh, wow. Very cool. So San Francisco, you got a lot of rain there, right?
We got a lot of fog and a lot of heavy mist, but I wouldn't say a lot of rain. There was three or four storms the time I was there. But
really?
Okay. But similar all across this West Coast. You've got a rain issue here.
I know, we do. We do, and it has been dry the whole state, even up north when it usually rains and it gets really cold. It hasn't this year, you know, and it's pretty bad. So when we get rain here, I'm sure some people are bitching anyway, you know. Because
what, in L.A.?
Yeah, because 365 days of sun is not enough for them, you know. One day of rain and they bitch, you know.
One cloud rolls by, everybody's disgruntled.
Yeah, exactly, you know. But I love rain. I happen to love rain, so we don't get enough here for me, you know.
Yeah.
But it's cool. I mean, it gives like a certain atmosphere, you know.
Yeah.
It's kind of dark outside, you know. If you stay home, it's nice and cozy. Even in the car, it's nice to hear the rain drop and
it
that,
is.
You know.
It's a beautiful sound. Although, you know, there's no fireplaces to snuggle up in. It's not, I mean, it's snuggling weather, but there's not many outlets for snuggling here.
That's
in
true, huh?
L.A.
You come from the East Coast. It's a whole different ballgame.
I know.
There,
I'm
right?
getting pictures every day of, look at this snowstorm, and oh my gosh, the flurries are coming. And I'm like, yeah, I know. I'm just chilling by the pool, trying to hide in the shadows, not freckle.
Yeah. So this is cool. And so you grew up in D.C. or outside D.C., did
just
you say?
Just outside of D.C. It's easier to say D.C., but from that area, it's the Northern Virginia area, which is still part of the metropolitan circle.
It is. Okay. So it's still part of it. So it's like being here and saying I'm in L.A.
Yes. It's like a 20, 30-minute drive into the city, and, you know, you do a lot of activities in the city itself, but...
Right.
So
it's not considered a small town or anything. You're part of a big thing.
No, not at all. Yeah. But it's definitely the suburbs where I grew up.
Yeah.
And it's funny being out here because where I live now, everyone's like, oh, that's the suburbs of LA. I was like, guys, this is not the suburbs. I can walk to the grocery store. Like, all of the houses look different. I'm used to cookie cutter communities with, you know, snaking streets. And so this is certainly an adjustment. But I loved the whole Eastern Seaboard. It's so much easier to drive up and down. I would leave D.C., take a four-hour drive, go up to New York, and here I drive for 8.5 hours, and I'm still in the same state.
Yeah, exactly.
Beautiful landscapes, but...
I know. That's one thing about the East Coast. You don't have to drive far to go to another great place, you know. And, yeah, here, I mean, we're surrounded by desert. It takes about 4 hours to get to Vegas, you know. And then, I mean, if you go to San Diego, it's a couple hours. Santa Barbara is a couple hours. So, there's nothing close that you can get to that's really, like, significant, you know. So we have to drive far to get places.
I'm still in the honeymoon phase, though. I still look around. I'm like, oh, my gosh, geologically speaking, this place is beautiful. I love it. All the arid landscape.
Well, don't bring up geology because we do get earthquakes here, you know. You haven't experienced one, right?
I experienced the last one up in San Francisco.
Oh, yeah,
like
that's
3:30 in the morning. I was... very disoriented. Did not know what I thought. My phone was vibrating loudly, and then my mother on the East Coast, she's a bit of a worrywart, so she called me at 7 her time, so it's 4 o'clock my time, and I'm still really confused. And she's like, "Are you okay? Is everything, did everything collapse? You live on the sand dunes out in San Francisco." But
wow, that's funny. Wow. So yeah, I mean, it's you know, we do get earthquakes here, but it's you know, we forget about them, and then it hits again, and then you go, oh my God, you know. So
I know, it was scary. I didn't even think about, I mean, you're obviously, it's a ever present worry, but I did not actually attach the dots of this is terrifying. You're just a tiny little creature on this big earth landscape, and
exactly.
What can you do?
And there's nothing you can do. Absolutely nothing.
Stand in the doorway.
You've right.
Solved it.
Right. I mean, the shit collapses, you know. It's not like it just, like, things shake, you know. I've experienced several here. Never big ones, you know. I mean, they've always been. We had the Northridge earthquake in 94, but I had just moved away from here to Vegas. So, like, a week before that. So I didn't experience that one, but the house we left behind was damaged and stuff. You know, there was some cracks. And
oh, my God.
Yeah. It was centered here in Northridge, which is not very far from here at all. So it's still here in the valley. And so we're sitting, like, on top of it pretty much. You know?
Awesome. Right in the thick of it.
Yeah. You found a great place on earth to come and live, you know. So do you have any siblings?
I do. I have an older sister. She's 2 years older. Uh-huh. And that's it. We're very...
Yeah. Did you have a nice childhood and everything?
Oh, yes. I had a great child. I mean,
cool
again,
family.
I touched on it a little bit, but my mother is quite the worrywart. Like, doesn't do bridges, tunnels, doesn't travel outside of a radius that she established at, like, age 11.
Wow.
So for me, I'm the first person in the family to leave the Northern Virginia area. So.
Right.
I'm kind of an anomaly in that sense.
Yeah.
And every day I'm getting texts and emails. Like, my mother will just read crime blogs and send me statistics and be like, there was another crime that happened in your neighborhood. And I'm like, if you are looking on crime blogs, you're going to find crime. Like,
yeah,
okay.
That's true. I don't read crime blogs, you know, so I'm not worried about that.
And you're a generally happy person, right. So I think that bodes well for your path versus hers. But
oh, wow. That's got to be hard, you know.
I think that it definitely...
They have, like, a certain radius where you won't go outside of it?
Oh, my
gosh. So she doesn't travel or anything?
No. Does not travel, doesn't eat out. There's two restaurants in the area that we grew up in. It's one specific Subway restaurant and then one specific dish at Outback that she will eat, but for the most part, it's just very Ebola and all of these different things that you can catch.
Wow. So she has fears and things like that.
Yes,
a lot of anxiety, maybe.
Yes, but she's internalized them in a very funny way, so it comes out as hilarious. But then when you really slow down, you're like, it must suck.
Yeah,
you don't go anywhere. And she's like, I've got Google Earth. I'm pretty much world traveled. So I know what's up. It's pretty funny. But,
cool.
Yeah, but and then my father is a very patient man who understands her and coddles her. But childhood was great, very creative household for the East Coast. I won't
very
say
nice.
It's very creative compared to some West Coast parenting techniques I've seen, but parents definitely encouraged being creative and, you know, just...
Very cool. So did you, after high school, did you go to college or what did you decide to do?
I briefly went to college for about a year. And then I have really bad anxiety and that really bubbled up when I went into college. So I went back home and then got a job at the Discovery Channel and just started powering through career wise and then got involved in radio and then the nightly news. So
wow, very cool.
I lived my 20s in reverse pretty much.
Yeah.
I went from high school to corporate 401k and then slowly after that I'm like, oh, I can try something different.
Yeah, very cool. So at least you went out in the real world early on and stuff.
Yes.
Yeah, I mean, you know, college is not all it's cracked up to be, you know. At least it doesn't. I mean, look, I think the experience is cool. I went also for a year right after high school and I realized I'm not ready for college yet, you know. I mean, this was like in the 70s. We were doing drugs and everything. And
sounds like the perfect time to go to college.
Yeah, there you go, you know. except I couldn't focus on anything, you know. So I didn't go away to college. I was living in Vegas at the time, so I went to UNLV. And at the time, it wasn't a big deal school. And then they got a good basketball team, so they became more known.
Wow.
And so I remember, yeah, we were doing some serious drugs then, and like Quaaludes and stuff. I don't know if you know what Quaaludes are, but they were popular back then. They were like tranquilizers.
And,
yeah, and people
sounds like a real
them.
Fun time.
Yeah, I know.
Get
so
up and go.
I know, it's like drinking a 12 pack all by yourself. You know, you get pretty numb. You know, and in fact, I think the Pink Floyd song "Comfortably Numb" was written about Quaaludes, because yeah, it was going on at the time. And it was pretty popular, yeah.
Oh.
So, but you can definitely, I mean, there's no way you can go and focus on school when you do that.
Yeah, it doesn't sound like that's a study drug.
No, not at all. So I decided not to go to college. I only went back later, like when I was 26, 27. But I thought it was better because I approached it more as like a business, you know, like work where you have to, where this is what it takes to excel. And I did, and I graduated with honors and everything, you know, and things like that. Yeah, thank you. So I recommend if you feel you're not ready for college right after high school, don't go, you know, especially when many people don't even get they don't even get a job. You know,
I know.
We've talked about it on the show several times that, you know, millennials are not really getting anywhere with their degrees.
Yeah.
You know,
I have a
so
lot of friends
sucks.
That are in the school, just staying in school. They're like, look, I'm already in debt. I can't get a job. So I might as well, let's go back and get my master's
yeah,
and get my doctorate.
I know. Well, those things will help. But a bachelor's degree, not anymore, you know. So that's pretty sad. So, I mean, so, and plus you turn out to be a creative type of person, so I don't blame you for not being able to sit in school, you know, and study and stuff. I'm like that too, you know. And, yeah, you know, so.
I think college, though, is a double-edged sword, because on the one hand, I don't think you should go if you're not ready, but I'm realizing more and more as I get older how blessed I was that growing up in the community that I did, it was not even a question. Everybody was going to yeah. finish high school and then go to college, and right. you're kind of on this track. And I was frustrated with it for years, where I'm like, but if I choose something different, am I wrong? And then right. I go to other communities where I'm like, some people don't even finish high school. What? You can drop out? That's an option. I didn't even, whoa, take off the blinders and realize how lucky I am.
Wow.
However, not lucky with the crippling panic attacks. And but, you know, you live, you learn, you get through it.
Yeah. Make so what, did you feel it was, like, overwhelming for you? Is that why you felt anxiety about it?
I think that it was, I mean, I wasn't even that far away from home. I was about 3 hours. And it was all of these really irrational social phobias started to present themselves, where it would be, yeah. I mean, I would explain them to people, and as the words would tumble out, I'm like, this sounds ridiculous. I was scared to go to class because I didn't want to jostle people's chairs. I thought the teacher would get mad at me if I, you know, said certain things. So I just wanted to do all of my classes online and
right.
not participate in the social element. And, you know, like, just wanted to control my entire world and realized I couldn't do that. So,
yeah.
So then when I got home, my parents were like, okay, well, you can pay us back for that, and you can figure out what you're going to do now. We love you and support you, but you need to get it together.
Yeah, that's awesome. So you went and got a job at the Discovery Channel?
Yes, that oh, I wow. was very lucky. I was 18 when that happened, and I went to a radio school, and they were teaching me, like, antiquated. I was learning reel-to-reel, and I'm like, I don't think that people are still using this, but I made a couple of really close friendships. And the man who owned the company, his daughter worked at the Discovery Channel, and he's like, you know, they're just looking for a media librarian. It's not that serious of a job, but you know, it could be fun. And so I started working that, and then I got an internship at a radio station, and was just
wow.
On
did
my
you
hustle.
Did you always want to be in radio? I mean, is it something you consciously thought about?
I wouldn't say that I thought of it like in high school. It was a non-issue. But then after my anxiety started to bubble up and I was like, you know what? I really want to be in a place where I'm respected for the content that I'm producing and the sound of my voice and, you know, things that are more internal than external. And no one can say you got a job in radio because, you know, your yeah. face is relatively symmetrical. It's, you got to have something else going on to make it work there. So
you wanted to go for substance,
yes,
substance more.
Exactly. Respect me. So put me on a male talk radio station and let me interview porn stars. Thank you. My parents are so proud.
I know. It's like everybody interviews porn stars these days, you know?
Oh, my gosh. Well, my mother listened to the radio station religiously before I started working on it. And then when I got on, obviously, uh-huh. I'm going to be a bit of a scapegoat and comedy fodder. And I remember when Ron Jeremy came in, she started freaking out because, like Ron Jeremy does, he offered to expose his genitals. And, you know, it was like, oh, you should do porn. And my mom immediately calls and she's like, do not do porn. And I'm like, do you really think it's that tempting? If it weren't for the scalp psoriasis or the greasy, scraggly hairs, there's very little that is enticing about this man's
That's true. And yeah, exactly. That's how I was impressed with him, too. He's been at the station a couple times. And if Ron Jeremy can make it, anybody can make it in porn.
There we go.
He was just there as one of the first, so he's become like a god to the industry and stuff, you know.
But, well, and to himself.
Yeah, and to himself,
too.
He's
very proud of his work.
Yeah. But he drives a piece of shit car that I saw. I'm not bad-mouthing the guy. I'm just saying this was my impression of him. He didn't smell very well in the elevator. And he seemed to be in another planet altogether. Mm. You know, his mind was somewhere else. I don't know.
Where could his mind have been?
Who knows? Who knows, you know?
Maybe the piece of shit car was trying to, the opposite of compensating, to be like, look, I don't even need an ostentatious vehicle.
Yeah, either that or he blew all his money and stuff. If he ever made any money, I don't know.
Blew it somewhere.
Yeah, some people have to realize just because you're famous doesn't mean you have a lot of money, you know. There's a lot of famous people that don't have a dime. Ugh. To their name. Yeah. So you went to work at the radio station. How long were you there for?
I was there for 2.5 years, and I was doing commercial work and production stuff and promotions and kind of like had my hand in every pot, just wanting to see where I really fit in. And then I started working at a news an aggregate radio station where I would do traffic and send it out to 12 different stations.
Oh, okay.
And I started on the weekends doing the weekend overnight traffic report in DC, which was great because I got to talk to a lot of truckers and...
Yeah. I mean, who drives on weekends at night?
My gosh. Well, on the Eastern Seaboard, I mean, we have 95 going through there, and that's a main thoroughfare for, you know, a lot of...
So there's like a lot of traffic overnight.
Oh, yes.
Really? Wow.
Well, and a lot of work zones that happened and... I know. You guys are spoiled out here. Everyone's like, oh, LA traffic is terrible. I'm like, you guys don't. Okay. I'll give you that. You guys can have your little claim to fame. But, I mean, DC, Maryland, and Virginia, there's always construction going on. They're always reconfiguring ramps and building new roads, and everything's just expanding. So I know if I went back there now, I've been gone for maybe a year and a half. I know that many of the work zones that I was talking about have completely changed the orientation of the roads.
Right.
So it's always something to complain about.
Yeah, that's true. Did you have to fly in helicopters and stuff?
No, I wasn't allowed in the helicopter. Whoa. My boss said that I was too chatty, and he's like, you're going to be a distraction to the pilot. And I was like, but that's like the coolest thing for traffic is to be up there. But
that's true. You wouldn't be afraid to get on a helicopter?
Oh, no, not at all.
Really? That's funny because, I took flying lessons and, I flew alone. I had a couple of incidences and stuff. But the thing is
that... Like hitting birds or what?
No. I mean, I was flying solo and I sort of like missed where I was supposed to turn and things like that. So then I had to figure it out on my own. And there was no GPS back then. This was like in the
80s. Oh, my gosh.
And we didn't have GPS, so you had to fly with transponders and things like that and with the map, and you had to figure out where you are. I was living in Vegas at the time, and I flew solo to Arizona. And
that's crazy. I would imagine that there's not many street signs up in the sky.
No, there aren't. And not many landmarks either. So I had to guess which mountain I was near and sort of like, you know. So I did make it to the right airport. But then as I was arriving there, I saw planes flying right next to me. Like, and I'm going, what the hell's going on here? You know, and it's an airport where there's no tower. You know, you just sort of like, because it's small. So you sort of like announce yourself to other pilots and you land, you know. So when I landed, I realized there was an air show there and nobody bothered to tell me that I was flying into an air show. So, yeah, and then coming back and stuff. So, I mean, I, you know, one time I had an incident when I was trying to stall the plane on my own, you know, as they teach you, like, how to practice. And I got into a spin, and I was heading toward the earth, you know, going vertical.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah. That was the situation.
But isn't that somehow, called, like, a death spiral?
Yeah, that's pretty much
really
what it
optimistic.
Is. Yeah. So I pulled out of it because I remembered how my instructor told me to do it. And I was able to pull out of it, but it's still, it's memorable. I remember I saw my death in front of me, you know. So
yeah, that doesn't sound like just a tiny little incident, little hiccup in the sky. Like,
I know, it just, I've told it so many times.
It's an old hat to you.
Yeah, exactly. So what I'm saying is, and even after that, I still flew and everything because I love flying, right? But in my older age, I started getting scared of it, and especially thinking of a helicopter, because you can't glide. I mean, if something happens, you just, it's gone.
You stop and fall.
And you fall. You just drop, you know. And, but it doesn't mean that it happens a lot, you know. It doesn't really happen a lot. And, but, you know, maybe it was for the best you didn't get on a helicopter. I don't know.
Well, they had a lot of Cessnas, too. There was a couple of helicopters, but most of what they flew were little Cessnas.
Oh, okay.
Like, oh, that would be so fun.
Yeah, that is fun. It's a lot of fun. Did you ever go on a small plane at all?
No, I've never been on a very small plane.
Yeah. It's pretty cool to take flying lessons, you know.
Did you take it just for fun? Or?
No, I was actually only a few hours away from getting my license. And then I moved here. I was in Vegas at the time. So I moved here and then I never really pursued it or anything. So, yeah, that's sort of a shame, you know. But
hey, you've still got just a couple of hours.
Well, yeah, but I'd have to go through everything all over again. I mean, yeah, you don't remember much. You know? And things have changed in, what, 30 years? My God, I can't even believe it's been that long.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Is it? Yeah, 90. Yeah, 30 years. Fuck.
What? That's awful.
I can't even believe I'm that old.
Time is flying.
It does fly, let me tell you, you know.
Oh my gosh.
And before you realize it, you're in your 50s and you go, what the hell have I done? Where's my life gone? You know? And looking back at my 20s now, it's like 20s are the best years, I think, in your life. 20s and the 30s, you know. But 20s, it's like you're carefree. People go partying all the time. They go have fun, socialize a lot, you know.
I think that's a whimsical view of the 20s.
Is it really?
But that's, I'm projecting because I'm still in my 20s. So
yeah,
I'm
that's
coming
true.
To a place where I'm there's a lot of stress. There's a lot that's happening.
I guess there is, yeah.
I am not partying.
Yeah. But wait till you have a responsibility of a family. Then you'll see what stress really means, you know.
Fortunately, don't have to worry about
that. Yeah, exactly. So enjoy your 20s because they don't come back, you know.
Cool. So what you're saying is everything is downhill from here.
No, that's not what I'm saying. Not at all. But I'm just saying that the 20s are years to actually enjoy yourself and not to have to really worry about, you know, unless I think it's never too early to start planning your future and your career and everything. But, you know, early to mid-20s is sort of like you just kind of glide through them, you know. Mm. But, yeah, I mean, you tell me something different, so it must be the times as well.
I think for millennials, times are definitely shifting in a way that I know high schoolers that are freaking out about college, not just going into college and adjusting, but they're like, what path am I going to get on that is going to secure me employment at the end?
Right.
And those sorts of jobs, unfortunately, we don't need. We don't.
Right.
We need more creative types. We need more engineers. We need more people involved in the sciences. And those careers aren't going to pay you immediately when you get out of college. And
yeah.
I think that because of the the state of the economy and how things are going socially and with the government and everything, people are much younger and much more aware of their responsibilities and how they're going to, you know, not to say that I don't have a lot of friends that are freewheeling, just loving life, but by and large, a lot of my friends are way more stressed out than I think that even a generation ahead of us has any awareness of.
Yeah. So mostly what, financial stress, would you say?
I think that shifting gear, realizing that you're not going to be able to save right at the outset, that you're not going to have a 401k, that you're not going to have the stability that maybe our parents had, or even a couple generations ahead of us had, that you're going to have to be a lot more creative and kind of you know, maybe not work in your career field and do this patchwork thing of multiple jobs overlapping to try to cover the holes until you get something more secure.
Yeah.
Because I was very lucky that at 18 and 19, I had full-time employment, 401k, benefits.
That's true.
I was all set. And
But it's not just luck. I mean, you set yourself out, you know, to do something like that, you know. I mean, you know, many people don't even think about going to work after high school. You know, after college, they don't even want to work. They move back home. You know, I mean, what is that all about?
Oh, but home is so comfortable and people make you sandwiches all the time.
That's true. And they pay your bills. Yeah. So so you worked in radio for a while and for the Discovery Channel. And then what, did you then decide to move to San Francisco?
Well, I continued working in radio and did traffic reporting and then got pushed into the nightly news. So then I moved from radio onto TV. I was doing both simultaneously, but I sound a lot older on air. So I was 21 at the time, but then they put me on the local NBC affiliate on the nightly news and I was doing traffic.
Wow, very cool.
It was fantastic, but I also had no idea what I was doing.
Really? Yeah, because you were new at it.
And I don't really have a newscaster style as far as how I present myself. So I dress from the thrift store. So I had these fun, bright blazers that were really funky. And they're like, oh, my God. I remember getting emails that the subject line just said mistakes this week. And then it would just be pictures of me where I was like, all right, okay.
Oh, God.
Keep humble, you know?
Yeah, that must make you feel great, huh?
You know, but it's the nature of the beast, so that's why I was like, this is why I love radio.
Yeah.
Because it's all about my broadcasts and not, you know, how I'm sitting or anything.
Yeah. But so how long did you do the news on TV for?
I did that for about 3 years. And,
oh, wow. So the clothes weren't that a deal breaker for them.
We worked through it. It was a lot of playing games back and forth, passive aggressive, until I was finally like, oh, okay, all right, I can't wear the bright muumuu on camera. I've got to have the nice sharp blazer and chop my hair and dye it. And,
but that wasn't you, huh? Did you feel it wasn't you?
I felt like I was playing a part. And so I was still in there, but, you know, I wouldn't have chopped my hair to my chin and dyed it brown. I thought I was perfectly credible with my long blonde hair, but, you know.
It didn't work.
I'm the only credible journalist on the news. I literally just tell you what's happening. I don't tell you how to feel about it. I don't, you know, inject any opinion. I go, this is what's happening. Here's how you will avoid it. Here's a camera proving my point. Like, how I was not credible, but I was also, again, on an NBC affiliate and not Fox, so I could not be blonde.
Yeah. Oh, God.
Don't trust him.
Yeah, Fox only picks the blondes, right?
Oh, they love
their
blondes.
That's what people say, yeah. I don't watch Fox that much, but it's true, I guess.
Smart man.
Yeah, well, I don't know. People badmouth all the news channels, you know.
They're
two
sides, same coin. They're all in it together.
Yeah, I know.
I developed a lot of strong opinions about the news industry, having worked in it, and that's what kind of helped prompt my leave from it. The company was purchased by a radio affiliate that I didn't want to work for, and so I was like, okay, I'm going to continue to make my parents really proud and leave the nightly news and do stand-up comedy and sketch comedy writing and just explore creative
world. How did you get into comedy? Is that something you wanted to do?
Well, being raised in the family that I was raised in, I mean, every subtle little neurosis is wrapped in some sort of, you know, joke or, oh, we're just giving you material. We're being the crazy parents and crazy family just to give you great material. And I'm like, no, you're damaging me. Like, you're scarring me. You're causing me to, you know, talk to therapists. But no, I'd always been really passionate about comedy, and it was more about gaining the confidence to feel like, okay, I can really pursue this if I'm as aggressive with my work life and kind of melding the two.
And that's commendable with the anxiety that you feel sometimes and all that, you know. I mean,
it plays well on stage.
It does, huh? But it takes a lot of courage to stand in front of a lot of people and be funny, you know. Because, I mean, when you bomb, you know. I mean, it's
well,
like...
and unlike being on stage and part of a play where people can go and be like, oh, I didn't like that play. I didn't like how that was written. I didn't like that character. When you're on stage and it's just you and your thoughts and people go, I don't like you.
Right.
I disagree with your opinions.
Right.
Like,
so you take it personally. You definitely should.
You try not to, but I think that having the prior experience of just emails that were telling me how awful I was from my bosses, I was like, okay, I can deal with a couple of drunk people in an audience not agreeing with my opinions and finding me as hilarious as I find myself.
So did you start actually performing at clubs and stuff there?
I performed all over DC, Maryland, and Virginia, and started writing sketches and making my own videos and just doing a lot of hosting work. So I couldn't let go of my broadcasting background, so I would host events for one of the places that I worked for was called Tag Magazine, and it was the first lesbian magazine in DC, and so I would host events for them and go to the Mottner Project Gala, which is for women's health, and so I got to do a lot of fun things still using my talents and holding a microphone in my hand and also doing stage stuff. But it does, I mean, with my anxieties, I want desperately to be that comic who's like, yeah, I'm going to 5 open mics tonight. I'm just rolling along. And I'm like, I plan it out. And I feel like I'm going to either just like poop myself or have a total nervous breakdown before I go on stage. And then you go on stage and it's, oh, that.
You're a natural.
Oh, I wouldn't. I mean, you can say that, but I wouldn't go so far. It happens. It is a naturally occurring thing.
Yeah. So cool. So you got into comedy and stuff.
Yes.
Were you able to make a living out of that?
I did get paid for a couple of shows, but living, no.
You can't live off of that.
No, not quite yet. That's going to take a little while. But
yeah, it does. Even people here that are struggling, I mean, most of them, there's so many comics here. Yeah. And they all struggle to make it, you know. So, but you did decide to move. Was that like a big deal for you? I mean, you're going to a new place. Had you been to San Francisco before?
I visited once before and fell in love with it and was like, oh my gosh, this city is, you know, it's like a big hug and I just feel so supported here. And I had my best friend out there and she was like, you can do this. People move every day. And coming from my family, that was... If you moved away, I told my mom that I was moving to San Francisco and she looked me in the eye and she's like, you're dead to me. And I was like, what did you just say? And she's like, oh no, Ashley, you're being dramatic. You know what I mean? I mean that I won't be able to see you every day. I was like, well, that is not at all what you said.
Yeah.
You said something that's really hurtful. But yeah, it was a big, I was like, if I'm really going to fully commit to this and not make it, you know, a little piddly side thing and find some job that supports me, if I'm really going to go for it, I need to put all my chips out there. And so sold everything I owned, sold my car, which was a huge deal. Cause DC is much like LA where you need a vehicle to get around. Public transit isn't going to get you everywhere. So going to San Francisco was, it was a great year of reflection. It was a very quiet year where I had steady employment and kind of could look back and be like, okay, what do you want to do? What is your voice? What do you want to share with the world? And
that's cool. So it became sort of like an inspirational place for you.
Yes, very much so.
San Francisco is also very creative. It's a very creative city.
It's a beautiful... I have nothing but kind, loving things to say about that place. It is the funkiest... Although I thought that San Francisco inhabitants would be a lot weirder than LA people. but in the past month, I have learned that LA is much weirder than San Francisco.
Yeah. Well, we've got a bigger variety of people here. Very diverse here. And we have a lot of them, too. We have 4 million people almost in this town.
Oh, gosh.
Yeah. So you lived there for what, a year?
Just
in San
a year.
Francisco?
Mm-hmm.
And so what did you live off of there?
I worked at a restaurant, and I did stand up here and there and wrote a lot and read a lot. I'm a big dinosaur nerd. Like,
oh, really?
Really wow, deep into it. Cool. Don't even get me started. But so, yeah, it was just like a year of reflection and kind of figuring out how I was going to make what I wanted to happen. And I thought I would be there for a much longer period of time, but
yeah,
I'm also a little whimsically spirited. And so when things kind of fall into place, like things started to fall apart, and I was like, you know what, this is an opportunity presenting itself. And things came together down in LA where a room opened up that I had a mutual connection to. And I was like, okay, I'm just going to keep on rolling with it and see where the wind blows me.
Yeah. So then that's great. It's great to be able to do that.
One of the benefits to being in your 20s and not having
children.
There
you go, you see. Yeah, you can definitely find a place where you actually prefer to live. So you only been here for a month now?
Yep, a little over a month.
Wow, so you're like fresh off the boat.
I am fresh meat in LA. Haven't been gnawed up yet.
No. Yeah. Well, welcome to LA. I mean, we have a lot of people, but we always welcome new ones. There's definitely room for everybody.
Yeah, not on the roadways, but
yeah,
in the outlying areas.
I know. Well, it's just driving here sucks, really, because there's no public transportation here, you know, to speak of. So, and the people that ride it are not people you would really want to hang out with on a train or on a bus or something. You know?
I mean, it's not like San Francisco where I can just strike up conversations with people on the bus, make some new friends.
No, not quite. Not quite.
Dag, that's my favorite thing. Yeah. Talking to strangers.
Well, you definitely have a lot of strangers out here, you know.
Oh, they're strange, all right. A friend of mine took me down to one of the improv places on Hollywood Boulevard, and I just stood outside. Uh-huh. I was like, I need my notebook right now because I just want to write character descriptions, because the people here, they are personalities. They very interesting, colorful adornments all over them.
Yeah, I mean, people really take their time, you know, fixing themselves up and stuff here. You know, a lot of pretty guys, you know, that they do just about everything that you would think. I don't know. I mean, it's just like
blowing that whole binary gender system out.
Yeah,
of water.
You know, like plucking their eyebrows and things like that. And I'm not talking gay either, you know.
Just the manscaping.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, I have no problem with that if that's how you want to present yourself. I just get a little insecure when people have better eyebrows than me. I take a lot of pride in my eyebrows. And I'm like, oh, your arch. That's really nice.
Yeah.
Very expressive brows.
It's true, huh? It's like I never really notice brows. I don't think about them. But I guess women do, right?
Because, oh
I mean,
gosh.
Yeah, you have to pluck them and stuff.
Yeah,
and
absolutely. I mean, wow. I don't think that it's across the board that all women do. But
right.
I remember growing up, I learned the most about eyebrows from girls from Baltimore. Because they were the ones that would, like, shave half of their eyebrows and draw the rest on. And then you would see a lot of mistakes.
Yeah, that's
see a lot
so
of directions.
Cheesy to do that, you know? I mean, why would they do that? Is it to make it, like, look better, like a different arch or something?
Well, I think that when you can do certain things and play with highlights and colors, so it changes the shape of your eye and makes them more a focal point. And I think that they're a sign of expression. So.
Wow, very interesting.
Or people have what is that, like some sort of disease where they just like pluck out their eyebrows and
there's people that do that. Wow,
yeah.
I know.
So maybe that has something to do. I don't know. I've always noticed eyebrows and how people use them. And because I used to get in trouble when I was on air, they would be like, they would fast forward videotape of me doing reports. They'd be like, look at your face, look at your eyes, and look at your eyebrows specifically. And they would be going up and down, and I would be using them to talk and express myself. And
right.
I do that with my hands too. And
they don't like that, huh?
No,
you have to be like
stone faced,
stone faced.
Say what you want and let your voice do the emoting.
Yeah. So that's not for you. I mean, you're more expressive than that.
Yes. I'm a live wire.
Yeah.
Gotta let it out somehow.
Well, I know you're going to make it well here because you seem like an ambitious girl, you know, that takes chances and stuff, you know. So that sounds good. And so, I mean, do you plan on staying here for a while, or is this just a...
I do. Yeah. I feel like this town is what you make it, and if you're on that hustle, then it's going to open itself up to you. But I do feel like, you know, you've got to build.
You do, and you have to be, you know, you have to be patient, you know. You have to be resilient because there's a lot of competition here. A lot of talented people, a lot of beautiful people in this town, you know. And it's hard to compete. It's hard to stand out, you know. What happens a lot is you get like women or, you know, young women that come from other smaller towns and like in the South or the Midwest or something, mm-hmm. and they're like the most beautiful girl in town, and then they come here and they realize they're not anymore, you know. there's always someone more beautiful than you, you know. And so it can pretty much disappoint a person, you know, quite a bit and crush them. So
you understand why the porn industry is so lucrative here, all those people with crushed dreams and desperate for money.
Exactly. And they end up in porn. And I'll tell you, porn is one place where you don't have to have a great body, you don't have to look perfect, you don't have to do any of these things, you know. There's niches for everything. There's heavy girls, there's ugly girls, you know. There's niches for everything.
And headless men don't even need a, you don't even need anything above
the neck.
They're
just props, yeah.
They just stand in the background.
Yeah.
That's actually a really beautiful thing to think about. It would be nice if more industries were as open and accepting as the porn industry.
Right. That's why
they learn something from porn.
Yeah, exactly. And that's why they say, you know, the women in the industry say that it empowers women, you know. So go figure. Hmm. I mean, this is one of the places where they make the decisions. So maybe that makes sense, you know.
Well, maybe in some, I don't know, I have mixed feelings about porn. I used to be very enthusiastic and loved it and loved, oh, yeah, it's about feminism and women empowerment and they're taking charge. And then, you know, you kind of go down the rabbit hole and you're like, oh, wait, this is based on a lot of, like, power plays and women not being respected and women being objects. And how, like, how does that work into...
Yeah, there's a lot of racism and stuff, you know, all the interracial and stuff. I mean, they actually point out, you know, like, this is black and white, this is that, you know, this is young and old, you know. So there's like, it's very sexist and racist in many ways, but those are the tastes that people have for sex, you know. People want, I mean, there's consumers for anything and everything out there.
Yeah.
You know?
People just gobble up that genitals, all of them. Yeah, my attitudes towards it kind of shifted being up in San Francisco. A really good friend of mine was a sex columnist for the Bay Area Guardian, before they became defunct. And her article was all about being from the East Coast and being from a small town and then coming out to San Francisco and exploring, you know, different things. And she would do some bold things. She would invite me to things. And I was like, look, I'm really open-minded, but I do not want to sit on a pew and have my vulva filmed while I'm talking. She's like, oh, no. It's like raising awareness about how women don't look at their own vulva, like right in the eye. And I was like, I'm well acquainted with my body, but I don't think I need to, like, watch it while I'm talking. I think that would be, but to each his own, whatever helps you get there.
Yeah.
But I mean, there was just so much that I had no idea was even like she went to this one thing where it's like a community. It's not community sex, but she would lay down and there'd be a group of like 5 to 7 people and they would stare at her genitals and just describe them to her, like, oh, your lips are a rosy hue. And she's like, yeah. And, you know, it would just, they would push through and you would reach climax. And I was like, I don't think I could. I never even thought of that. But I really don't think that's my cup of tea.
Yeah. Well, you obviously have to be an exhibitionist to do those things, you know. And some people are trying to find approval or whatever it is. I don't know. You know, why people would get into that.
Find their own pleasure?
I know. Some people have such kinks, you know.
You're telling me, jeepers, creepers, people out here. I mean, I appreciate the fact that the discussion is open and that people are willing to say, but like, I went on a date and the person told me initially, they were like, you know, I'm a little into like power plays. And I was like, oh, that's cool. And they're like, you know, like ropes and guns and knives. And I was first date. Okay.
Oh, God.
All right.
Wow. Not and that the first date they told you that?
Well, you know, I tend to pull out a very genuine, open, raw conversation. I just like to put it all out there. So I'm learning boundaries. I'm learning. Baby steps. I might have had a hand in helping the conversation get to that point. But
yeah, you might actually attract these kind of people.
I just want to know. You know, tell me.
I know. I don't understand why people, it's like all their kinks have to manifest themselves through sex, you know. Like power plays and things like that, you know. Mm-hmm. So it translates into subs and doms and things like that, you know, where people take on roles, mm-hmm. you know, and it always involves sex, you know. And I think it's just because from childhood, so many, not necessarily scars, but memories mm-hmm. that stay with us, experiences, and they pretty much, I think, paint our future. I think, you know, they determine, you know, many people have like hang-ups because of sex, of how they discover sex in childhood and mm-hmm. things like that, you know. So, and sometimes, you know, people are attached to like leather and lace and things like that. It's like, what's that? You know, how does that connect with sex? But it does for people.
Yeah. I want to believe that, oh, no, it's just about people exploring things and feeling and its sensations. But you know that there's something psychological going on.
Yeah.
Like, you can't divorce the two. It's not all column A or column B.
Right.
But with that said, then it makes me feel like I'm like, oh my gosh, what sort of twisted things am I repressing that I didn't know about in my childhood?
But I know.
Had a great childhood.
Yeah. I know. But people get into anything and everything, and more power to them, you know?
Hey, let your freak flag fly.
Yeah, exactly.
Wild.
I mean, there's almost every niche you can think of in porn. You know, just about anything.
It's
crazy.
I remember I thought that more people would be on the same page, but I remember talking to friends of mine and being like, have you ever just like looked up the weirdest porn that you could find? Just because, not like for any sort of pleasure, but just, you know, you want to know like the really old stuff or like really old people or, you know, morbidly obese, like things that I am never going to walk in on a 400-pound woman having sex with a midget. Don't foresee that happening in my life. So I can access that on the internet.
That's true. And find that.
It's the time we live in.
You can find anything, my God.
it's what a wild world we live in.
Yeah, I'm telling you. Wow. Well, this is cool. So I just wanted to bring up real quick the Cosby thing before we leave. And you've been following that, I'm sure, like everybody else has. So apparently now at least 17 women have accused him.
Oh my gosh.
It's not one or two or three, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, so at this point, it's like, I mean, can you really deny this anymore?
When it becomes public fodder for discussion and, you know, people want to take sides on it, I think that we are so muddled in our views of who Bill Cosby was and who we think that these women are and, oh, they must be gold diggers or this, that, or the other. And it's like, you know what? He's a person. He is capable of royally messing up, and he's capable of abusing power. And is it really that mind-blowing to think of somebody in his position kind of using that to his advantage? And I think if even three people came out, it would be hard to be like, nope, nothing happened, nothing
That's
inappropriate.
True.
Because how many people go day-to-day that are smarmy, you know, unsavory people that don't get rape accusations their entire life?
Exactly.
And it's not like, you know, Bill Cosby is on his A game right now. Like, he has a lot of, you know, oh, he's rolling in it, let's hit him up now.
Right.
Come on. Who's going to do that? Who's going to want their name to be associated with that just to make some money? I don't know. What do you think?
Yeah, I don't know. I don't think so. And I also think we shouldn't really, well, we don't know their victims, you know, but I think also we shouldn't judge or decide whether, you know, they're trying to make money or not. I mean, that's something that is left, I think, to the courts if it ever comes to it.
Yeah.
You know, but for now, he's just in a lot of deep shit. And and like you said, you know, I'm not surprised, because I think many people in a position of power do these things.
Yeah.
And they're not as innocent as we think they are. And yeah, and you know, Bill Cosby is got this a squeaky clean reputation, because that's what he's projected, you know, that's his character, you know, but we don't know that that's the real person.
Yeah, you can't pull the funky sweater over our eyes, Bill.
Yeah, there you go.
We know.
There you go. Well, that's it for today. Ashley, thank you so much for joining
me. Thank you so much, Sam.
You're a lot of fun.
Time.
We learned a lot about you and everything. If anybody ever want to know, if anybody ever takes her out on a date, you want to know everything about her,
just
tune into the show and you'll know everything. So thank you, everybody, for listening. Thank you again, Ashley.
Thank you.
And we'll see you soon.
The best in morning radio. Tune in to Sam in the Morning with Charlotte. Only on LA Talk Radio.